The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. In the last two episodes of The Force Field, we discussed the possibility of offering malware removal services to our customers. In part one of our series, we discussed the different types of viri and other malware found in the wild, the challenges we face in the detection and removal of malware today, and the feasibility of offering malware removal services to our customers at a price we can profit from and they can afford. In part two, we learned about the organizations involved in the detection and removal of badware, some of the tools and techniques used to find and remove it, and where the malware problem could be heading in the next few years. This week, we'll talk with a representative from a security company that offers a well-established virus and malware protection suite for the home user, small business, and the enterprise, find out where he thinks the industry is headed, and learn how we can partner with his company to provide affordable, award-winning, and reliable security solutions to our customers. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. The OpenOffice.org community announced a second beta release of OpenOffice.org 3.0 to the public July 15th. OpenOffice.org 3.0 is the latest release of the open-source Office suite originally developed by Sun Microsystems, and it's considered by many to be one of few serious competitors of Microsoft Office. In an email announcement distributed to members of the OpenOffice.org community marketing group, John McCreesh, OpenOffice.org marketing project lead, told members of the marketing group that the second beta was released publicly in response to feedback received by the community to the first beta released 2 months ago. The new beta was released publicly to provide a broader base for testing the new version, but was not intended for use in a production environment. According to McCreesh, OpenOffice.org 3.0 is due for release in September. The Office Suite is released under the new GPL and is freely available. OpenOffice.org version 3.0 Beta 2 is currently available for download in English for Windows, Linux, OS X, and OpenSolaris at download.openoffice.org/3.0beta. AMD announced that its board of directors elected President and COO Dirk Meyer as the new CEO of the company July 17th. Meyer replaces Hector Ruiz, who led the company during the last 6 years. Ruiz led AMD from a second banana in the desktop market to a serious contender in the server arena with the launch of the AMD Opteron processor, transforming AMD from a minor player into a serious competitor for Intel. The company has struggled during the last 2 years with snafus and product delays, resulting in quarterly losses for AMD. Ruiz will remain on the board of directors as executive chairman. Meyer, who joined AMD in 1995, helped design the AMD Athlon processor and was involved in several facets of the company's operations, including research and development, manufacturing, and marketing. He was elected to the board in 2007. According to a company press release, Meyer's appointment was part of a 2-year plan. Dirk's election to CEO is the final phase of a 2-year succession plan developed and implemented jointly by AMD's board of directors and executive team. Robert Palmer, lead independent director, said in the press release, AMD recently recorded a net loss for the second quarter of over $1 billion. A debate is brewing over the necessity of defragging solid-state drives. According to an article posted in the July 15th issue of System Management News, the debate centers on whether performing a defrag on a flash drive helps performance or provides no real benefits while actually hurting the drive. Some industry experts believe defragging a RAM-based device will increase efficiency. However, most experts argue that hard disk drives with mechanical reads and writes experience longer seek times as files become fragmented, but flash memory is not limited by those constraints. Solid-state drives have a limited number of rewrites, however, and moving files during a defrag will certainly use those writes and shorten the life of the drive. You can read the article in the July 15th issue of System Management News. A single issue of System Management News is $9.95, but a subscription is free to professionals who qualify. If you are an IT professional and would like a free subscription to System Management News, you can subscribe at theforcefield.tradepub.com/free/SMNS or simply click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. Yahoo has rejected Microsoft's latest bid proposal to purchase the search company. The reason? Yahoo wants to sell out completely, or not at all. The Microsoft-Yahoo deal is the talk of the media. There are many who think Microsoft-Yahoo would be a great combination and would prevent a monopoly that Google is threatening to become. Yet, despite the fact that Google and search are nearly synonymous, there are other choices out there, for now. While Microsoft's current search product is hardly worth mentioning, it is still one more competitor to offer users choice in the marketplace. If they purchase Yahoo, Microsoft and Google will have the combined market share to render all other search engines essentially non-existent. The two super searches will also have the eventual power to possibly do the same for online advertising, SEO, and other marketing venues. Then there's the question of web applications. What will happen to consumer choice once a majority of them are owned by two mega-giant web companies? Who will control the software-as-a-service market? Who will control access to free or open-source web applications? A few months ago, one of our administrators at theforcefield.net, Todd Hughes, blogged about the dangers of a Microsoft-Yahoo deal for Zimbra. Zimbra is an open-source application developed by Yahoo and is the only serious Linux alternative for Microsoft Outlook and Exchange. Microsoft has insisted that their primary interest in Yahoo is for the search engine. However, if Microsoft buys Yahoo, all of it, then they will own Zimbra. Microsoft is not a fan of open source. Although they've recently made overtures to the contrary, and purportedly for personal gain, they have also made it clear that they are an enemy of the open source movement and seek to control or destroy it on several fronts. When Microsoft buys Yahoo and has Zimbra, what will they do with it? What will they do with the other code in Yahoo's portfolio? What will they do with the patents? They can say anything to appease the public. The question is, given their history of aggression against the open source movement and their anti-competitive practices in general, do you trust them? I don't. That's why I think this deal, while great for Microsoft, is very bad for us. And that's the news in the Force Field.
This is Linux Chick from the Alterna Geek Podcast over at alternageek.com. At the Alterna Geek Podcast, Tech Monkey and I cover tech news, how-tos, hardware, software, and gadget reviews, Linux, Windows, Mac, and all things Internet. Stop by alternageek.com and take a listen and join in the conversation on the website or send us an email letting us know your take on things at podcast@alternageek.com. Alterna Geek, we're not your typical geeks. AlternaGeek is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Josh Jones, co-host of the CS TechCast. If you're looking for cutting-edge technology news and information, then check out CS TechCast. Each week, we bring you the latest technology news and trends from around the industry, in addition to interviews with the best and brightest in technology. Stop by cstechcast.com and check us out.
You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk or leave a comment to use in an upcoming episode, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8, that's 407-278-5698, or through Skype at Savoia Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast episodes page at www.theforcefield.net, and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last episode, we talked with Chris Bequeth, a service provider, about the challenges of offering malware removal services to our customers in what is quickly becoming a complicated business. One security vendor that knows the business well is Kaspersky Lab. Kaspersky offers a complete line of antivirus and anti-malware solutions for both home and business. This week we're going to talk to John Eddy, Senior Vice President of Sales at Kaspersky Lab. We'll find out just how serious the malware problem is, learn about the Kaspersky Partner Program, and find out how we can use it as resellers to market and sell solid security solutions to our customers, as we conclude with part three of our three-part series on the business of malware. And we're speaking to John Eddy, Senior Vice President of Sales at Kaspersky Labs. Hi, John. Welcome to the Force Field.
Hi, Rick.
John, before we get into the discussion, could you give us a history and overview of your company?
Sure. Kaspersky Lab primarily focuses and develops anti-malware solutions. We've been in the business for about 10 years now and hold the claim to fame that we are the largest private security software company. We are a Moscow-based company with international offices throughout the world. North America, Latin America, Europe, Japan, China, we're very global in our reach.
So it is pretty much a global company then?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Well, great. John, when I started building and selling computers, malicious code, generally categorized as a virus, was something you usually picked up from an infected floppy disk or by downloading some hacked program. And now we have adware, worms, trojans, keyloggers, rootkits, and other forms of malware. And it often doesn't take more to get this badware than innocently landing on a website. And I think those of us who have been in the industry for a while know the answer to this question. But just like the parents of a juvenile misfit, we can't help but ask ourselves, what happened? With all of our wonderful technology, where did we go wrong?
I think what's really happened is not so much the ability to stop the threat. It's really how the threat's being delivered. And what we've seen happen over the years as malware has developed is really that malware has been criminalized. So initially, malware was this very loud, conspicuous, noisy threat. You saw these worms or whatever that were being written, and the intent of the writer, of the malware writer, was to be seen, right? It was a vandalistic type act. So the virus writer was trying to gain notoriety or whatever, And so these were very in your face, very easy to spot, very easy to detect, and so forth.
Sort of a rite of passage for hackers, in other words.
Absolutely. And, you know, there have been several studies done on the profiles. They tended to be kids and so forth. What's happened recently is that malware has been thoroughly criminalized. And what I mean by that is the intent of the malware has changed. So now what the malware writers are trying to do is they're trying to get victims' data, things like their identity information, it might be trade secrets at a company, credit card numbers, banking information, and so forth, and they're trying to monetize it. So what we're starting to see is kind of the cybercrime ecosystem develop, which is driven by these organized groups of criminals. And obviously, if you're a criminal and you're organized, you don't want to get caught. Mm-hmm. So what we start to see is malware that is not conspicuous. It kind of hides in the recesses of the computer networks out there or individual users' machines and runs silent for the express purposes of stealing that data.
Like rootkits.
Like rootkits would be an excellent example. And it's very important to recognize that the user community and software developers like ourselves that are trying to protect against this threat are up against fairly well-motivated, organized entities here. So, I mean, just to give you an example of how these groups are organized, most people don't realize, I mean, it all starts with typically there's some group of investors. Mm-hmm. These individuals are kind of fronting the cash to develop the malware and distribute it. They develop business plans and ideas, and they sell and market that. They hire and assign project managers from all over the world to kind of manage the distribution of the malware. They hire consultants, or sometimes they call them specialists. The individuals that develop the botnets, the spam, hackers, they in turn hire individuals that specialize in distribution mechanisms or conduits. Wow. Experts at social networking, malware distribution through IM or email or whatever. And these tend to be groups that are pretty global in nature. So, you know, a distribution specialist might live in Brazil. You know, the malware consultant might be in Russia and so forth. They Wow. steal the data. And then they convert it into cash, and then you have these guys called money mules that kind of have to launder the money and bring it back to the investors. So that's what we're up against. I mean, it's not kids writing funny little viruses anymore.
So it's very organized.
Very, very organized. And so, you know, the ways that you can address it, the threat, is through technology. And technology today, because the threat, as I indicated, is kind of silent. These guys don't want to get caught. There's a lot of money at stake for them. Detection and cleaning becomes a core element of the technology. It's not, can I respond to a threat that's in my face and is showing up on CNN and is very loud and noisy? I got to go find that threat because it's buried somewhere on my network or my system. And therefore, the detection and cleaning element does. The other element, which we are hopeful someday will materialize, is obviously international cooperation on the law enforcement front. That's kind of difficult to achieve today, not because the will isn't there, but just because you're dealing with so many countries and cultures and politics and everything else around the world, makes it a little challenging to build universal law enforcement. So until that happens, I think, you know, we're really reliant on technology to protect ourselves.
To pretty much clean it all off after the fact. As a technician in the IT business myself, I've done a lot of business in the past cleaning up and removing this stuff from my customers. and every year it gets more difficult and time-consuming to detect and remove it. And for my customers, it's becoming more expensive and difficult to defend against it. From my vantage point, it seems to be getting worse and worse. Just how bad is it?
The proliferation of the malware is incredible, especially this year. I've been in the industry now about 16 years, and I've never seen anything like what we're up against here in 2008. Just to give you an indication of what we're dealing with here, our lab is predicting that this year in 2008, we will probably analyze over 20 million new samples.
20 million?
20 million samples will be sent to us for analysis. Of those, we are predicting that potentially a million will require signatures in our engine.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea of what that means in terms of scope, in 2007, we detected approximately 500,000 new signatures. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a 2x increase this year. Again, you know, the money is what we believe is fueling this proliferation. Mm-hmm. It's easy for these groups to fund the malware writing. They rarely get caught. It's low risk. It's an easy crime to commit. It's not like you're looking somebody in the eyeball and stealing their purse or something. You're doing it anonymously over the internet. You never see your victim. You never see the pain they experience or anything like that. And it's growing. It's crazy.
So it's relatively safe for the attackers. So what do we do here? Short of pulling the plug on the internet, our networks, and all of our PCs, what do we do really to protect ourselves from all this?
I think the first thing is users of the internet and computing devices, whether they're desktops, laptops, you know, mobile handsets, whatever they are, you know, you have to try and educate yourself on how the bad guys attack. And, you know, what are the symptoms of an attack? And you have to try and educate yourself on how to protect yourself. The information is readily available. For example, Kaspersky Lab hosts a website called viruslist.com that does just what I said from an education standpoint, lets users understand what the threat is, you know, how the bad guys operate, how they distribute their malware, and what protection is available to them. It is possible to protect yourself. There's a lot of technology, some delivered by Kaspersky Lab that will protect the user. You have to run it for it to work, and it is possible to protect yourself.
So Kaspersky offers a line of anti-malware solutions for both home users and businesses. Tell us a little more about your products.
Basically, what we develop is what we call an endpoint security client. And this endpoint security client, whether you're a corporation, small, medium business, or an individual consumer, essentially provides functionality in a couple of different areas. One, we do detect and clean malware, and we do this a number of ways through very sophisticated technology. So we do what's called blacklisting, which is signature-based scanning. So we've got this great big database of known bad stuff, and we basically check a file. We see if it's a known bad product, and if it's known to be bad, we block access to the system. We also do behavioral analysis. We're looking at files and executables and so forth that are running on our customers' machines, and we're looking for activity that would suggest that's malicious code. If we see something happening that we know is potentially malicious, we can block that. We also, in our consumer products, have application control, otherwise known as whitelisting. Mm-hmm. So there are certain applications that we know that are safe to run, and our software can recognize that and allow those applications to run. Beyond that, we include in our endpoint security client a firewall to stop hacking, both inbound and outbound. If somebody has hijacked your network or something like that, even if it's a home network, we control the outbound as well. We block and filter the outbound. We have anti-spam for our clients. And for the consumer products, we also have parental controls.
These are all in the Internet Security product. What's included in the standard antivirus product, just the antivirus program?
Yes. Okay. For the consumer, we have two central suites. We have the Kaspersky Internet Security Suite, which includes everything. Mm-hmm. And then we have a standalone antivirus, anti-malware product.
Now, when they purchase the product, it's a one-year license, a three-year license, or from one to three PCs? Is that how it works?
That's correct, for the consumer. And on the corporate side, there's a variety of different licenses that are available, ranging from 1 to 3 years. There's maintenance packages. There's all kinds of flexible licensing options available to our corporate customers as well.
Well, for our listeners who are resellers, and most of them are, Kaspersky also has a channel partner program. John, tell us about Kaspersky's reseller program.
Sure. We call our partner program the Green Team. And there's a couple of things to understand and note that we think makes us unique in this industry. First of all, when it comes to corporate sales, we are a 100% reseller-dedicated company. So we don't take any transactions directly from corporate customers. We only work with partners and resellers.
So you're very channel-friendly then?
We are very, very channel-friendly. And this program really offers our partners a lot of benefits, from training, certification, marketing support, profitability in terms of margins. There's just a number of things in this program that make it very, very attractive to the reseller community.
Now, you also have an affiliate program for resellers and webmasters to generate revenue on their websites. How do we become a Kaspersky reseller or affiliate? Where do we join?
On our website, which is Kaspersky.com, there is a partner page which you can either request information or submit an application to resell our products. We also have a number of qualified sales professionals that can talk to our partners and explain our program to them and the benefits of reselling the Kaspersky products. And all that information, again, is on our website at Kaspersky.com.
www.kaspersky.com.
Correct.
Well, John, what do you think is in store for us in the next 3 to 5 years with the coming convergence in technologies and an increase in internetworking and interconnectivity in a global marketplace? Do you think it will become almost impossible at some point to control malware and cybercrime, or could it possibly morph into something else? Where do you think it's going?
You know, it's tough to say. The crystal ball, when you're dealing with bad guys, looking into a crystal ball and trying to figure out what they're going to do, always has its risks. There's a couple of things that, you know, I see, having been in this industry, is it really is the good guys against the bad guys. And the good guys have a lot of smart people on our team. The bad guys have a lot of smart people on their team. And at the end of the day, you know, we just kind of have to match wits. And, you know, us good guys need to figure out how to stop the bad guys. The bad guys will find innovative ways to exploit systems and steal data and so forth. And the good guys are going to develop technologies and processes to stop the bad guys. And, you know, I don't see this conflict ever ending, but I don't think that the bad guys are going to win. I think that, you know, us good guys are going to win in the end here.
Well, I certainly hope so. Well, John, thank you for joining us on the Force Field today. Before you go, can you give us the contact information again?
In order to reach us, it is www.kaspersky.com. All the phone numbers are listed for technical information or sales information. There are tabs up there for home users or business users. It's a pretty friendly site, tons of information. If you would like to get security education information, how to protect yourself, information on malware, you can go to www.viruslets.com, and there's a wealth of information up there which users can access, a lot of content that is very useful.
Oh, great, John. Once again, thanks a lot for visiting us today on the Force Field. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.